Renee Johnston here, and I know Renee because Renee helped me greatly when I was doing research on the People's Party or Movement for a People's Party. And without your help, that video would not have been what it was. So thank you for that up first. But you also are prolific on social media, and you have a Substack and some other things going on. So go ahead, introduce yourself, anything that you'd like to say, and we can get into these third parties.
Sure. I am Renee Johnston. I am a Green Party registered voter. I dem exited as quickly as I could when I moved. My Substack does not do a whole, it's mostly when I move to write something and I feel like it needs to be kind of out there. There's no, I think I've probably been over a year since I wrote anything, but it's just to share my thoughts. But I think the third party discussion is one that it's getting lost in the grift and lost in, the argument. We're back to the vote blue no matter who's, and we're gonna have this battle and vote like your life depended on it, and it's the same argument has circled back again. So I'm glad to see you do this. You did a great job on that last one that we talked about. It was
Thanks.
great.
No, thanks. And even though you might post infrequently, the Substack is great. We use one of those articles, so for sure.
Thank you.
And then for transparency too, I didn't talk about this in the last video, but I've voted everywhere. The first presidential election I voted in was the Gore Bush, and I voted Nader. I canvassed for Ralph Nader as a teen, barely legal to vote at that point. But in the past, I've voted for various third parties as well as Democrats. So I'm a little bit everywhere, and a lot of people are. But this video, we're going to talk about the pros and cons for third parties, and this segment's going to be more of the pros. Why should you vote third party? And I think third parties have gotten a bad rap over the past few years, where they seem to be maybe ascending a bit in the 90s. There's been a backlash for various reasons. But so, as someone that, like yourself, that's been involved in third parties, I think the place to start when we're talking to people on the street, you just say, I'm promoting this third party candidate. I think that the expectation for many people is going to be, I don't want to waste my vote, right? And so that's kind of the base level, right? So if we're advocating for third parties, where do we go from there? How do we respond to something like that?
So, someone who's really hard pressed to say, I don't want to vote third party. It's going to ruin the Democrats. It's a waste. This, that, they can't win. They're pretty hard to change, right? Like it's hard to have that conversation because essentially because of the way the system is built, because of how hard it is to get ballot access, because of how hard it is to be on a national level with a third party. They're not really wrong in the sense that, their vote, would go to a smaller party and then it won't actually change the outcome of the election in the way that they want to change the outcome of the election. The difference, however, is if you vote third party, you then give the third party a chance to affect elections, right? Like in almost every state, in order to maintain ballot access, get ballot access, be recognized, all these things, you have to get a percentage of the population to vote for your candidate. So one of the real reasons that you want to vote third party is to allow someone outside of the duopoly to be able to have access and ability, right, to be a voice in whatever sphere you're voting in. So people think it's a waste, but if you're trying to break out of, this consistent lock-in with either Democrats or Republicans, the best way to do that is to allow someone else a seat at the table, which you can't do if you don't vote for them. So you have to be willing to give that piece up in order for there to be any shot of breaking this cycle that we're now locked in, where everything is about the lesser evil and, vote for the person who's going to do the least damage or who's going to allow for incremental change. And, but, I said it to you before we started recording, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. So I don't know how long people can continue to be expected to just vote within the duopoly and live within the duopoly and vote between Democrats and Republicans. And you know, it's this constant circle of the same exact thing. And if you don't do something different, nothing's ever going to change. So there has to be a point in which people are willing to say, all right, you know what, I'm willing to throw my vote away if it means that we won't be trapped in this same cycle again for another 2 years, another 4 years, another 6 years, which, you know, whatever cycle we're in the middle of in the voting chain.
Yeah, you need to get the ball rolling, right? And right. So if you don't vote third party people are never going to get votes, I suppose. So yeah, if there's going to be any inertia, people need to start voting, I guess, right?
Right. 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 And I think people also misunderstand that you don't have to, you know, even if you're afraid, let's say you're one of these people who's deathly afraid of the Republicans getting the power, right? Mm-hmm. You can vote third party locally, right? There's a lot of opportunity to open doors for Democrats that are running on policy, right? There's a lot of independent candidates. There's a lot of candidates running on, you know, all of these. There's a variety of parties in every state where they're allowed to actually start the party and have access and do the candidate thing, right? But they're local. You know, people misunderstand the Green Party. Oh, they never win. They never win the president. They never win. They're not in Congress. But they've got, I think it's like 150 people in local seats that won their seats in election. So it's not like they don't exist in politics. They exist. They just exist on a local level. And I think people often, they misunderstand the importance of that, right? Because yes, there are all these things happening federally, but for most people, the changes that most need to be made are within your locality. They're within your county. They're within your district. They're within, you know, within whatever neighborhood you live in that has like a city council seat, within your school board. Like, these are the places where those things happen. And people, I think, misread how important it is to pay attention, as much attention to your local elections as you do to your federal elections.
Yeah, I think what you said is perfect. And a lot of course, the rhetoric and for casual voters, it's like anything else. And you get involved when it's the national, you know, maybe a Senate or House, but definitely with the president. And you know, I think it's fair to say that is more difficult for a third party at the moment. But as you said, much of what impacts your daily life happens on the local level. And right. The local level is a different ballgame. And perhaps that's not discussed strategically, or maybe there's no audience. You know, I don't know. People are selling these things.
I think it's a little of both. I think there's no audience because it's not discussed strategically, right? Like,
yeah.
People don't pay attention because they fall into the trap, right? Like, they're watching TV and the news and all those things are talking about what's happening on a federal level, right? They almost never talk about the local stuff. Me, I'm the one who I'm like waiting for the little feed to come from my local paper so I can find out
what's happening. Yeah, some local reporter on Twitter.
That's what's important. So
yeah. Well, and that, so, you know, that's interesting perspective. And it kind of dovetails into the next big one. And this is probably more from like a liberal or progressive perspective. But then there's also the argument that, you know, that sounds good. However, it's still, except for maybe some specific cases, right? It's very difficult for a third party candidate to win, and that you could by default be helping the opponents, right? And, you know, I think in actuality, this is what people say, a vote for Jill Stein or a vote for Howie Hawkins is a vote for Trump, you know?
Right.
And so
absolute nonsense. Like, your vote is for who you voted for, right? Like, it's not. If I checked the box for Jill Stein, I literally did not check the box for Donald Trump. So it's not, I literally, you know, like, we can play that game, but there's no win when you play that game, right? Because the reality is, whether Trump is in, Biden's in, Clinton's in, like, all these, they all do the same thing. So In my mind, it's very hard for me to sit back and pretend like there's such a differential, right? Like it's so different than it would have been if Biden had lost. I mean, yeah, are there a few things? Maybe. Are those few things enough that it really changed the material conditions of people? No. So what? And I think this is why people don't vote. And then people get mad at people who don't vote and say, oh, well, you're not voting, you're not participating. This is why. No, people don't vote because they are in protest for the fact that they can't vote for people who are actually going to do things that are going to change their material conditions. It's a protest, right? It's literally them saying, I'm not participating in this process that is not going to do anything for me or my family or my district or my community, no matter who is in the White House. So why should I bother going out?
I mean, yeah, another throw your vote away or now is it's never the time for a protest vote, right?
I mean, that's what they say, but when is there a good time, right? There's never going to be a good time for a protest, but you still have to do it. Like there has to be a point where you are willing, and it people are going to get really mad about this, but you have to be willing to say like, okay, well, if the worst thing happens, then so be it. Maybe that'll be the lesson that we need to learn in order for things to change. And it clearly wasn't. I mean, we got Trump. We lived with him for 4 years. People were spilling out into the streets. He's not my president. This, that, the pink hats, the whole thing was going. But they all sucked it up in the end, right? Like they all just kept going. And then, then they used it for an excuse for why Biden had to win the next time. And we're still in the same situation. The economy is still a mess. We still have student debt that's crazy, even though he's doing this thing that they're claiming that I'm just waiting for the lawsuits to start and for nobody to get their student loan forgiven. We still don't have Medicare for all. I mean, almost all the big things that would have really made a change in the material conditions for people that he promised, right? This was the big thing. He was promising all these things. He's going to be the lesser evil, vote blue, this is going to work. None of it happened. So where is the evidence that voting for the lesser evil actually works for people? There is none. There's like whatever people want to point to say, oh, but this thing would have happened. But where's your evidence that it actually changed something for the people who needed something to change? For the people who are in, bankruptcy over medical debt, for the people who are still struggling with their student loans, for the people who don't get health care because they don't have a doctor because they can't afford it, for the people who still aren't making $15 per hour, which, oh, it frustrates me when I think like Bernie and him on the screen and oh, my guy Joe, he's going to get $15 an hour. That's going to be the first thing he does. That didn't happen either. Nobody got their $2,000. Like, there was so many things. Right, that was supposed to happen because everybody sucked it up and they voted for the lesser evil, and none of those things happened. So for you now to tell me that I would be wrong to not again comply with that nonsense, like who's the real fool, right? Like you've already been fooled once because you went with it the last time, and now look at where you are. And now you want me to do it again? Like I'm no thanks. I haven't voted for either party, probably since I voted for Obama in 08, and that was the last time. I can't. And he was such a disappointment. I can't participate in the process anymore in that way. Like I'll always go vote. As a Black woman, I feel heavy like not voting. Like I have to do it. But that's me. That's my personal, and I'm more than happy to skip down, ignore the federal seats that are going to be on there and skip down because, there's some council seats open. There's a school board open. There's a decision on some kind of mandate that needs to be made. So I'll vote on all that stuff and I'll go and I'll cast my ballot. But I'm not going to vote on the federal level because the one progressive that was running in my district didn't win the primary. So what's the point? I'm not going to bother.
It's without taking sides, it's been a tough message lately. Everything that you stated, Roe v. Wade as well. But maybe to the Democrats' fortune, Republicans really have been going crazy. And so it's kept the argument afloat, you know, when you have, you know, QAnon folks and you know, people storming the Capitol on the other side. It's yeah, but it's
And
a tough sell.
I don't blame people for feeling that way. Like, it's okay. Like, you're afraid. You feel like a little bit better is better than, you know, worse. You know, you don't see the differential. You don't see how Biden has kept so many Trump policies in place that somebody has to wonder, like, is nobody paying attention to the amount of things he's allowed to continue to happen since Trump did them? You know, they're all those things, and they just feel like that's not as important as making sure that you don't, that you know, you vote for the less evil. If that's your feeling on it, then go for it, right? Like, I'm not here to vote shame people and to say, oh, you're crazy, you can't, why would you? People have to do what works for their conscience. What annoys me is people who tell me that I'm wrong for voting my conscience, right? Like, I'm letting you be, let me be. Right, let me do what I do. So,
They're both shaming you.
right.
That's the life of a third party person.
It is. It really, really is. And I always, you know, I look at things like, and I'm blanking on her name, but what happened in Buffalo with the mayoral race, where the socialist won the primary, right? And then Democrats and Republicans banded together for the write-in candidate for the incumbent to make sure that the socialist who won the primary didn't actually win the seat in this Democratic town, right? Because God forbid you have somebody in there who's actually going to fight for what the people want you to fight for. Like, can't have that. So I'm hard pressed to keep, you know, being on the defensive end for the Democrats, because they don't do anything for people, right? They're just as guilty, in my opinion, of blocking people's ability to use their vote as their voice as the Republicans are with, you know, their nonsense and gerrymandering and vote rigging and all those things. Because, like in North Carolina, right, they all banded together, they stopped the Green Party from getting on the ballot. Thank goodness they won. But now, you know, he's going to be able to be on the ballot. But it's crazy to me that people don't see these things and question, why am I supporting a party that is not doing anything to ensure that my freedoms and my ability to do the things that are best for my material conditions can actually happen?
And that kind of goes in, I think, to the next line of discussion. And it could be, I think it comes in many forms and depends what kind of election you're talking about. But I think generally, whether it's, especially if we're talking at the federal level, that it's almost virtually impossible for a third party candidate to win on a national level. And, you know, we've already said maybe state, that's why local is an enticing conversation. It doesn't happen enough. But for people that want to vote for Jill Stein or Howie Hawkins or whomever, you know, Peace and Freedom, or there's so many of these, that you're throwing your vote away in a protest vote that's literally impossible to win, right? It's just they don't have ballot access. The Electoral College, first past the post, is not going to allow a third party person to win. So until those structural voting, whether it's actual law or whether it's just in how we do things, whether those change, there's almost no point because they can't win.
And I go back to saying, at what point do you stop allowing that to be the rule, right? Like, at what point do you say, okay, it's really hard for them because of the ballot access, so I'm just not going to do it? Well, how are they ever going to get ballot access if people don't start fighting for their parties to get ballot access, right? Like, there has to be a point, and one of the conversations I like to have with people is, why don't people talk to non-voters more? Because there is such a vast number of people who don't go to the ballot. I almost feel like you could bypass a lot of this by talking to those people and convincing them to go vote, even if it's just for your ballot, just for your line on the ticket, right?
Yeah.
If all you're doing is getting somebody to come in and just cast the one vote, you can ignore everything else, but vote for this one person who's running third party. If all the non-voters came out and did that, this conversation is no, right? Like, you're going to get way more than trying to get people who were voting Democrats and who are hardcore, you know, vote blue no matter who's, to vote a third party. So
yeah,
it's a lost, it's very disappointing for me when I look at how many people disregard non-voters as people who just don't care about the process, instead of recognizing the non-voters are people who care about the process, but realize the process does not care about them. So they don't participate because they have no reason to participate. So maybe one of the things that people should be doing is giving people a reason to participate, right? Like,
yeah,
give people the thing that would actually give them a reason to leave their house and go do something that they don't normally do, because they feel like, oh, you know what? Maybe we can push this change and get somebody in who gives a crap about my material conditions, and then we can move forward from there. But that it's a lost group because people just toss non-voters out the window. Well, and they don't, you know, they refuse to acknowledge that it's a protest. Like, it's a conscious, with all the conversations about voting and this and that, it is a decision to not go vote. Yeah. People don't forget to go vote. Like, they say, I'm not going.
Yeah. Well, it's true. You know, you go to work and everyone has their stickers on, and yeah,
right.
You know, you really have to be the one that explains, like, no, I didn't
right.
vote, because everyone's going to ask you why. Right. People don't ask you why you voted, right? There's a peer pressure. But, you know, it's interesting that you phrased it in that way too, because it kind of takes away from the argument, whether you're a Republican saying don't vote Libertarian, or on the other side, don't vote Green, Peace and Freedom, you know, whatever. It does away with this argument of you're just taking votes away from the party, and that by default is giving them to the opposition. Because right. What you're saying is these votes were never rolling in anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. They were never part of the equation. So,
yeah,
you know, maybe if we invested more energy into talking to the people who simply refused to go participate in the process, we'd get further with, you know, trying to expand our full political system to not just be about these two groups of people, both of whom are working for the same people when all is said and done anyway.
Yeah.
And none of those people are, you know, those of us who are running out to vote, right? Like,
yeah, people aren't voting. They're not voting for a reason. It's likely right. It has to deal on some level with the two political parties, right?
Right.
That makes a lot of sense. How about, so we get these people and we get some folks to go out and vote, and they're doing good. How about the idea of just the inability to compete financially? Because that's a big one too.
Right.
Look, that, you know, maybe you can get someone locally and that's good. But even if we had ballot access, even if we did something, whether it's ranked voting or some other, you know, top two primary or something, we change a system to accommodate these third parties. However, because of finance and what that means for media and advertising, that they're just going to get buried.
Right. So, you know, it's back to the same. It really is the same answer for everything, which is okay, but you can't stop that from being a thing by just continuing to allow it to be a thing, right? Like, if you allow the big money to rule who gets the votes and who gets the, you know, the attention and who gets whatever else, then that's always going to be the thing that wins. I mean, there are plenty of people in local seats who win that don't have millions. You know, there was a joke down in South Jersey, and I wish I could remember the district. Somebody won, he on like $500 or something crazy like that. It was, you know, it was, and he was a Republican, so I hesitate to make too much of a thing about it. But I mean, it worked. Like, it's obviously possible, right? You don't need to have millions to win your local seat. You just have to be willing to do the work, in my opinion. I'd much rather vote for somebody who didn't have money, but who knocked on my door and had a sincere conversation with me about why they think they're going to do what I need them to do in my district. but I also don't watch the news or media. I'm such a bad person sometimes to go with on these things, because I don't get swayed by the things that most people get swayed by, right? Like, I don't watch the major networks. I don't watch the 6 o'clock news or five, whatever time regular news comes on. I don't watch MSNBC. I don't watch all of these things. So I'm not swayed.
But it's intentional. People aren't. Yeah.
Right. And it's intent. I don't watch them because they're all talking the same nonsense, right? Like,
yeah,
we're like living in a bad movie right now with, you know, with this, the hard sell by the media. And, you know, I watch and I think of, what's that movie with, I'm going to blank, with the train that went through the different districts, and everything they saw was, you know, from whatever the top people wanted them to see. They had no idea like what was really happening in the world.
I'm thinking of like They Live, you know, that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
It just, yeah. It's very easy, and it's, and in some ways it's nicer, right? Like if you just go along with what everyone is selling you and you're okay and you have a job and you have insurance and you have a car and you have a house and, you know, everything's fine, like in your little sphere of your family and your friends and your network, then it's easy to just keep complying with these things because you don't really need anything to change, right? Like you're good. You don't have an issue with how things are working in this country. And it's funny because, you know, I'm one of those people, like I have a job, I have a house, I have a car, I have insurance, but my view is always, but I know that's me. And there's so many people who don't have that, right? Who could have it, because it's not like it's impossible to give people these things, right? And if you're willing to accept that and to continue to go along with that, that theory that like everything's fine with me, so everything should be fine for everybody, then, you know, it's unfortunate. You know, I feel like one of the worst downsides to this society is we're selfish, right? Like I'm fine, so I don't have to worry about the person who isn't fine. And I don't know how we get out of that as a society, right? I don't know how the consciousness of people gets changed in a way that they understand that you're only as healthy as the sickest person in your community, right? You should only have as much more than you need as a person who doesn't have enough, right? Like why is it okay for things to be so unbalanced? I'm just not that per, I don't see that as, I don't think it's okay. I don't really know how to change it, but I don't think it's okay. So.
All right. Well, and talking about changing it, right? So if we get somebody who starts winning and however it happens magically, they create a coalition, whether it be, you know, a representative in the House and the Senate or maybe the president, then as the discussion goes and it gets a little more nitty gritty, we don't have to get too particular, but then there's this discussion of, even if they win the election and they get power, how are they going to implement any policy when they stand alone or maybe with a smaller group of other third parties? And you know, how are they going to, who are they going to caucus with? How are they going to push their agenda from the bully pulpit if it's an executive, or get things through committees if they're in the House and Senate? Even if they get there, they could just get blackballed, right?
Mm-hmm. It's so, and my answer to that is, but that happens every presidency, right? Like
yeah, it does.
Every presidency, there's an excuse why nothing can get done, right? Like, oh, we didn't have enough people in Congress. Oh, we didn't have enough people in Senate. Oh, we didn't have, there's all, that excuse always exists no matter who's there. And even when they have the supermajority, like Obama did, then they use the excuse of bipartisan why they don't want to push anything through.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's always going to be the excuse of, well, how is anything going to get done? Well, shit, nothing getting done now. So like, why are we, why is that I don't understand why people use that as a valid reason. Like, what
Yeah.
is happening right now when Democrats have the Senate, have the House, have the president, and we still can't get anything through? So where is the differential that you want me to be so concerned about that doesn't already exist?
Yeah, it could be turned on its head, very easily to say, well,
Yeah.
yeah, I know. That's a problem, isn't
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. Those seem to be the big ones. And most it feels like most of these arguments are kind of boiling down to it's impossible and you're going to help the other side, And there's there might be legitimate concerns within that, but the counter to a lot of this stuff, and there's very spe you know more than I do when it comes to organizing locally and what can actually happen, to be honest. But there are specifics about what could change. But in general, it seems like it's very much that, well, nothing's going to change until you start making a change as well.
Right. I mean,
So.
there are a lot of things that would still be in place now if people didn't say, okay, we can't keep doing this, right? Like, if people didn't say, we can't keep owning black people, we'd still have slavery, right? If people didn't say, we can't keep telling black people they can't drink from the same fountains as white people, we'd still be living in segregation. If people didn't, like, there has to be a point in which people say, okay, this is, yes, how things have always been, but in order to change it, somebody has to be willing to change it. Somebody has to be willing to say, okay, I'm not just going to go along with the status quo. I'm not going to go along with the thing that I've always done in order to ensure that something different could happen, right? And I'm not saying it's easy, and I'm not saying that we wouldn't fall into some crazy, like, oh my God, how'd we end up here? Hellified dimension if, the Republicans win it all. I'm not at all pretending like that wouldn't be a problem. What I'm saying is, I don't know that the problem is so much worse than what we're dealing with right now that it's not worth fighting to do something different, right? Because if the Republicans win, I'm not going to be any more afraid of police than I am right now. And I'm not going to be any less afraid of police than I am right now. Right? I'm not going to lose my right to, I mean, I'm a little beyond the age of worrying about like women's rights and, not women's rights, but like the right to an abortion. Like I'm not in that space, but that's not going to change for me no matter who wins next. Like that ship has now sailed, and pretending like keeping Democrats in power is going to be able to, turn that around is nonsense because the Democrats are in power now, and that's when we lost it, right? Like it's not like the Republicans are in charge and we've now lost the right to have an abortion, right? The Democrats are in charge and we've lost that right. So I think it's important for people to understand that you're fighting to hold on to a system that is already not working. So where is the value in that? Where is the power in that? Where is the growth in that? Where is the ability for things to get better in just trying to hold on to the thing that's already not working?
That's very well said. So that and that kind of segues into, all right, well, maybe somebody who is undecided, you're at work and the election's coming up and it just comes up. Maybe it's on TV. Are you gonna vote for either of these clowns or what are you planning on doing? And the person, says, I don't know, man. They're all corrupt. I don't even bother anymore. I'm not waiting in line to vote for. They're the same anyway. And maybe that could segue into, what you're discussing before. Maybe this person is a non-voter and that's somebody who, you can entice. So then what's the pitch? How would you say this is why you should vote for third parties?
I mean, the pitch is you're not voting because you're sick of what you're getting now. So this is your opportunity to vote for something that is not what you're getting now, right? Like this is your small window to actually do the thing that's going to be different that's going to be separate from what you've already from what everyone else is doing. You aren't going to vote. So, you know, maybe you get that 5% for the Green Party to get ballot access in your state, or 7% or 500,000 or whatever madness the state has put in place, right? Maybe you help that happen, and now you have a reason to pay attention to the electoral process. You know, it's tough. Like I hear people all the time talk about, like, I don't involve myself in the electoral process. I don't believe in it. I don't think it does anything. And they're not wrong. They're not wrong. So I don't tell people, oh, that's crazy. You have to vote. You don't have to do anything, right? Like, you literally don't have to do anything. So everyone has to go into this process making the decision of, am I okay with continuing to support a system that does not work for everybody? Or am I willing to be a voice of a person who does something different in hoping that you change that old process? There has to be, like, that's your decision. And if other people say to you, oh, well, you wasted your vote, you say, okay, I'm sorry you feel that way. I feel like my vote was very well used in making sure that the duopoly is not the only thing that exists in this country, because it's not working.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, just even looking over some reasons, they all, you know, encompass what you said. And I feel like things that, you know, we discuss where, well, there's lack of ballot access. Well, then let's change that. Everything seems to go back and forth with this, you know. If they gain power, they're not going to be able to legislate or push their agenda because the parties will box them out. Well, then we need more differing representation, and we need enough to have coalitions, and we need watchdog parties that might not be a majority but act more maybe in a parliamentary kind of way to make sure that things happen.
You have to be willing to be the spoiler. You have to be willing to be the person who says, like, I'll survive. I survived 4 years of Trump. I'll survive 4 years of whatever comes next. If it's not the Democrats, I'll survive the 4 years if it is the Democrats. Like, you have to be willing to eat that feedback, right? Like, people were really mad at me when I said I wasn't voting for Biden. I mean, I was very adamant about it. I was very vocal about it. I don't like Kamala Harris, so there was definitely, like, her getting on the ballot didn't help anything for me, right? Like, that was not a push in the direction that they thought it was going to be in my house. And people were really angry. I mean, angry. I had friends who were like, yo, I don't even know if we can be friends if you go through with this. And I was like, I guess we're not going to be friends then, because I'm 44 years old, and guess what? I can go do what I want to do, because that's my right, right? It's my right to go and vote for who I want to vote for. And if that means I'm going to go in there and check off a Hallie Hawkins or write in Bernie Sanders or whatever, I wrote in Bernie Sanders just for the, you know, just for the sake of saying it. You know, then that's what I opted to do, because I felt like doing that was more important than being complicit. And it's like, when I see something happening in a place that's not to the benefit of the people, right? I'm not going to keep doing it, right? If I go somewhere and everybody's beating the crap out of somebody, like, I'm not just going to jump in and start beating the crap out of that person because everybody else is doing it. That's not beneficial. So there has to be a point where you're willing to do something different. And not everybody's willing to do that. And, you know, I won't be mad at people, but I also encourage people to stop being mad at people who won't do it. Like, it's okay to let people do what their conscience pushes them to do.
Yeah. And, you know, that's probably a good place to end, because in general, even with other people I've spoken with who have differing opinions, the summation is always this, that at least in the past few years, regardless of what side you're on and whom you're talking about, that there's some real anger and frustration, and that doesn't necessarily help people. It could be valid and it could be legitimate, you know, and we can own that. But when people see anger or frustration, that can scare them too. You know, it doesn't necessarily win them over, regardless of how valid or authentic that emotion is. And I only say that because that was brought up in the other video as well, of it's not enticing if people are talking in this way, because what if they could be talking about me, right?
Right.
Yeah.
You just have, you know, I say it all, people got to learn to be brave. It's not easy. I'm not brave in all things, but with my voice and my truth, I'm going to be brave, because that you have to do it. There has to be a point where you're willing to, you know, to eat whatever comes back at you, because you decided to be honest as a person. And, you know, you'll live. We hope.
Renee, thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for having me on.